It's Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio. This is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and all together we become better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and with me are the programmed members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. We have Floating Point Phil.
I am well programmed and written mostly in C++.
Oh, very good.
For those of you scoring at home.
Yeah, it's a lot of vitamin C. And we have Machine Learning Mike.
That's the best kind of learning. Good evening, fellow humans.
Come to the machine.
Relinquish your wills.
And for all the rest of you out there, please send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or feedback at songtalk.ca, and we'll share your thoughts and feelings on the show. And please visit us at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest. And before we get to tonight's guest, a little bit of housekeeping. Of course, we are now 1 week away, guys, from our songwriting challenge. Is that right?
Yeah.
That is correct.
And in case you don't know about it yet, we are challenging ourselves and our listeners to write a song where the chord progression never changes. And the three of us are going to share our answers to the challenge on next week's episode on January 26th. And replies from our listeners, of which we've already received several replies, will be shared on the February 16th episode. So if you're interested in participating, and you should be, write up a fresh new song, send us your answer, send us an MP3 and your lyric sheet to feedback at songtalk.ca by February 9th, and we'll feature your song on either the February 16th episode or a future episode if we need to allot some more time to that.
And how is it going, fellas?
I'm done.
Oh, you're done? Nice.
I finished my recording last week. I'm like shoving it away. I think I'm finished.
Nice.
Until after the show, I may make revisions based on what you guys say. It's not been released yet.
Exactly. It's always a living, breathing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Bill?
Well, I was hoping to do more last weekend, but instead we decided to finally take down the tree. And put away all the Christmas decorations, and that took up much more time than I anticipated. So so the next, definitely this weekend, we'll be busy finishing off the track, and probably some, maybe even a day during the week. I might even take a day off of work. So my boss is going to be ticked off, I'll tell you that.
Believe it when I see it, man.
Really?
How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm happy with the shape of the song, and I'm just now looking to get it recorded proper. Nice. So, but yeah, like Phil, I'm going, I don't know when I've got the time to do that. Okay. So hopefully, I won't take a day off work because I'm a good employee. But I guess it'll be an evening then.
Well, and of course, Michael, you've sent the track to me and Neil, and we're going to add some stuff to it.
Yeah, I'm quite excited to hear that. Neil's already been working on some drums, some drum tracks for it, so that'll be exciting. I was collaboration experience.
Yeah, it should be good fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's always fun to work on someone else's song because it's like no musical decisions, no songwriting decisions, just have fun with it.
Yeah,
exactly. I'll bear the responsibility. You guys just have fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
The song sucks. It ain't my fault. The drums were great.
The song sucks, but man, is it in time. Well, it is a groove.
Great, Mike. I really like that.
I think the key for me is going to be not to tense up and sort of like kind of panic. I need to kind of relax into it and just sort of let stuff flow.
Yes.
But, I think it might be an interesting song this time.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be good.
I'm quite liking mine. And mine wasn't a, production craziness because it's just piano and vocal. So it's very ambient with lots of reverb. That's about it.
Oh, very cool. I don't think I've ever heard you do any of that type of thing. So
I've done it a couple times. but yeah, not very often for sure.
No.
Very often, yeah. Usually, I'm doing down with the electro pop thing, so it's a switch for me. But the song wanted that. You know what I mean?
Yes. And of course, some big news.
Yes, the passing of Phil Spector.
So. Yeah, that's huge. He was such a huge force in production. I mean, he really became sort of like a producer that everybody knew, and you know, it was a Phil Spector record versus, you know, an artist record, and most people don't know who produces what, frankly. And this was, I think, he was the first time, I think, the average person sort of had some idea of who this person was.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, because he's up there with George Martin in terms of knowability, probably, as the producer guy, and maybe Butch Vig.
But, yeah, he was, yeah. Phil Spector was quite assertive in getting his name out there in a way that George Martin wasn't. Mm. What I didn't realize was that he was a session guitar player in the beginning. Hmm. And went to school or had some early association with Lieber and Stoller. And they helped him out with his career in the early days.
It was interesting. I know one of the big stories is that, because he did the Beatles White Album, is it? He did
Get Back or one of them.
Hey Jude?
Yeah, where he took it and he put a ton of strings on after.
Yeah, and they were never very happy.
Was it Long and Winding Road, maybe?
Yes, definitely that.
Yeah.
All those strings, they're a little overdone for what they intended, I think.
Yeah, that's always true.
The thing that I read today that surprised me was that the Tina Turner song that he did, the Mountain High, what was it?
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, that was a commercial failure?
Yeah.
At the time?
Wow.
Such a great track, and I was like, I didn't know that it flopped when it came out.
I guess it's timing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, it's sad. He was certainly a force in the music industry, and certainly had some troubles. I think maybe with some mental health issues, and of course wound up in prison. Yeah, another one of the major stars who's passed away.
Yeah,
It's going to be interesting to see who the major stars will be from these years. You know, who's going to stand the test of time? Because a lot of very big artists who we don't really recognize anymore,
like modern contemporary artists.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's like people who are very, you know, popular in their time, but now most people just don't have they didn't stand the test of time.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah, mm. Yeah. There's always going to be that happening.
Yeah, and I think there are so many people out there right now making music. Like tons of music come out all the time. It's much harder to stand out.
Yeah, well, that's very true.
In the early days, there were fewer outlets for music, and there were fewer people making music, so it might be easier to recognize names. But now, when there's 25,000 songs released every month,
and everyone has a recording studio in their laptop,
exactly,
in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
All right, oh boy. Okay, so our guest tonight is Jay Gordon Wright, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, and performer. And we're going to start the show. We're going to hear a little bit of his song, Take Your Time.
Take your time. I don't know.
terrific.
Jay Gordon Wright is a multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, and performer who has entertained audiences around the world. He is classically trained on violin and expanded his musical tool shed to include just about every instrument he can get his hands on. Writing songs at the piano or with the guitar, his trademark style often includes dense vocal arrangements, vintage textures, and earworm melodies. Jay Gordon has had the thrill of performing alongside Canadian luminaries such as Ian Thomas, Bill Dylan, Mike Boguski of Blue Rodeo, and Steve Strongman, who was a guest on our show a while back. And he has appeared with the Hamilton Philharmonic Orchestra on From the Beatles with Love, and is well known as a student and practitioner of the Beatles craft. Blending his influences with a strong musical instinct, Jay Gordon Wright has developed a sound that is at once vintage and modern. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you so much, Neil and Michael and Phil. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. So I want to open with a question. How do you write a Beatles song without ripping off the Beatles?
Well, it comes down to a few things. I mean, it's a combination of songwriting and production, really, and how you go into it. And listening to you guys off the top and talking about a recording studio in your pocket and that sort of thing. I think the further you go down that road, the harder it is to get back to sounding like the Beatles. It's kind of a reliance on analog and natural and being in the room. But I mean, at the end of the day, I really believe the only way to sound like the Beatles is to just, you know, live in their world for a little bit and kind of immerse yourself. And I guess at a certain point, just kind of by osmosis, take it on.
Like, does it take like a real deep study of classic Beatles songs or?
I don't know. I can only speak to what I've done, which was really a deep study. And when you do that, I mean, one of the things that's so interesting about the Beatles catalog is you can kind of start at the beginning and do the journey with them through to the end. And I don't know many other artists where that's true. There's so much pressure, especially these days, to kind of hit the ground running with a first song that's as polished as anything else that's out there on the market. Whereas with the Beatles, I mean, to start at Love Me Do, it's almost laughably, facile, and yet still catchy and heartwarming. And then by the time you end up at the end, you've taken the whole gamut and you've seen pretty much everything there is to see.
Of course, the main thing is that, you know, not only did the culture, but the technology kind of grew up along with them. So, you know, you're really hearing with Love Me Do, very, very old approaches to recording, you know, recording studios where your engineer wore a shirt and tie because he was a professional. And, to the last album, which it was all, you know, smoking up in the room and being a musician, you know. So it's interesting to see how the whole sort of concept changed.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that has to do with authority as well. I mean, when they started, they were not in a position to do what they wanted to do in the studio. And that's why you get kind of that constrained sound in a lot of respects. You know, in some ways, it's disingenuous to say that the technology grew up with them because they kind of made the technology grow up. They were in a position uniquely, I think, to be able to say, I want it to sound like I'm swinging around the room on a chandelier.
Yeah.
And then someone has to figure out how to do that. And that took some working and some figuring. But, I mean, even I'm less of an expert on Billie Eilish, but there was one of her songs recently that had an effect of sounding like coming through a fan. And they wanted it to sound like cigarette smoke. And that stood out to me. It just seemed like such a Beatles thing to do. And it struck home that it's kind of been a while since we've seen that sort of innovation as well.
That's true. She's very producing based. Sorry, go ahead.
No? It's saying from a songwriting perspective, like what is it about the Beatles songs to you that really stands out and says to you, hey, I want to do something like this. And then more specifically, like what are the actual things that you pull out of their songwriting?
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, we're talking about the song Take Your Time, which not musically in terms of the notes, but takes a lot of cues from She Loves You, starting with kind of a cold open chorus. you know, mentioning instead of a verse chorus, we're doing a chorus verse. And even then realized that it's chorus verse verse, just like She Loves You as well. So, I mean, one of the things that they did really well is if they did have a formula, they probably had about five or six formulas that they could go to. And that's something that I've always looked to, is song inspiration can come from different places. And one of the places it comes from for me certainly is to be able to say, I'd love to write a song that just comes in right on the chorus. Mm-hmm. And Take Your Time comes out of that desire. And of course, it's more complicated than that. There's a lot of different inspirations and influences, but they had, you know, such a focus on form in their writing that it's something that you can actually dig into and express yourself through that form.
Do you have a certain era of the Beatles that is your favorite?
It's so hard to tell because they do so many different things well in each of the eras. Hmm. I love the energy of the early eras. And to a certain extent, and I mean, you always have to be careful when talking about the Beatles because anything you say can and will be used against you. But to a certain extent, the early Beatles, there's so much melody in there. Mm-hmm. And the focus really was on the melody. Later on, they can get into playing with texture and form, that sort of thing. But I mean, the melody was front and center in the early Beatles. And I think that appeals to my my sensibilities.
For me, it's definitely Up to Rubber Soul. And then after that, I mean, I respect what they do, but it doesn't, like, I love the early stuff because it's almost like listening to Bach, where Yes. It's like it's basically a template where everything else was sort of built upon. And I think actually, if any songwriter, if you go through the early Beatles and just pull them apart, you know, figure out what notes they start on, see how the notes go through the chords, you will learn so much about how to build hooks, how to build great forms, and how to build great melodies. And you will sometimes, the songs lose a bit of polish because of that. They kind of get into a different part of your brain, but you will learn so much about songwriting.
It's absolutely true. And one of the things that I think they did better than anyone in the history of songwriting is they were so ready to throw everything they had at the page. I remember listening to Hard Day's Night, and at one point it hit me. I mean, the outro that George plays on the 12th string, for any other band of that era, that was a song. They just threw away a song on an outro that fades out and nothing happens with it. But that was the extent of their prolific songwriting, that they weren't afraid to just say, like, I've got this fantastic hook. Hey, let's stick it on the end of something that has nothing to do with it and fade out from it. Mm-hmm. It's almost arrogant in some ways.
They had so much to use that they didn't have to be precious with it.
Just burning dollar bills.
At that point. Yeah, exactly. I'm curious how, when you can learn so much from the Beatles, how do you get your own voice using their structure or their song or their sounds, or, you know, using them as inspiration, but how do you still stay true to yourself and what you want to say?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people who have heard my music that say I'm a terrible person to ask about that. I don't know. I mean, listen, it's got to be different for every person. And I think songwriting as a mechanism for finding your voice, even the function that it serves can be unique. That can be your voice. When you say voice, a lot of times it means just your physical voice. Mm-hmm. That's on the record. And then it can also mean your songwriting, the way you write songs. And it can also mean what you have to say, and it can also mean how you say it. And I mean, even just with those four definitions, I really truly feel you can be fairly derivative in three of them and still have something valid to offer. I think sometimes it's like a Trojan horse almost. It's like, you know, I'm going to use this to get in because you know it and you love it. But then there's other things to say. And that's kind of been my philosophy. And so I think you can stay true to your own voice just by realizing what it is that you want to be true about your voice and what you're willing to give up as well.
Do you have you played these pieces live, like in bars and that kind of thing?
Not recently.
No, of course not.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I've a lot of my performing has been in the tribute world, and it's so much easier to get a positive response doing that sometimes than, you know, I've always remarked on the fact that it's just a part of what our society is, that if you stand in the corner with an acoustic and play original songs in a bar, it's fine. Everyone's fine with that. No one's going to get too upset. But if you start playing "I Want to Hold Your Hand," now you've got people's attention. So, I mean, most of the time when I've gotten up in front of people, it is other people's songs that I'm playing. But definitely, yeah, I've played these songs.
Because I think most people don't realize that, you know, the Beatles in the very early days were actually very, very raucous. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't quite as smooth and as, you know, polished as they were in the recording studios. They're, you know, there is an early band. They were all teddy boys and dressed in leather. And, of course, the great irony is that, you know, the Rolling Stones were supposed to be the bad boys of rock and roll. And they're all sort of like middle class kids who went to like art school and stuff. You know, like the Beatles were the ones you didn't really want to meet in a dark alley, because
yeah,
they could be kind of nasty. Well, especially John, too.
Yeah.
You know, in his early days.
Okay. And especially when, like, when you talk about that early mid-Beatles stuff, and you say that they had a few different formulas that they went to, I think that's really kind of inspiring, because, you know, you look at the structures of some of those songs, and, you know, you think it's a bridge, but then it happens again in the song. And is that a chorus or a post-chorus? Or was that, why did it start with the chorus? And like all these things that they played around with structure. But the important thing is that each section is given its due attention, and it's hooky and it's compelling. And it doesn't matter that it's not, you know, a conventional verse chorus structure. And I really hear that in your song "Take Your Time" as well. You're playing around with that idea that this part of the song is the most important part of the song right now.
And right. Yeah.
You're not necessarily leading, not necessarily anticipating the next part or whatever, but it's that attention to detail that really stands out.
Yeah, and I mean, they also had a way with that as well, and transitions from one section to another.
Yes.
It wouldn't just be hard stop, hard left turn, now we're going to the chorus. Mm-hmm. And McCartney really carried this on. I think he drove a lot of that. He was most concerned with kind of that, the transitions. And I remember he came out with a song in 2013, I think, the album New. And the title track is, I really think you could study that for weeks, because it's so seamless, and it's a lovely ride. You never feel like, okay, now we're leaving the verse going into the chorus. It's just, you're there before you realize it. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's great. Even his new album is really interesting to listen to.
Yes.
I have a question for you about Take Your Time. Where did it come from? What was the process of you creating it?
I think, if I'm honest, the very beginning of it really was wanting to write something chorus first. I hadn't done that before, and I wanted to try that on for size. And I guess that, you know, maybe there's a lesson there that it's one of those story starter ideas. It's just to get out of your comfort zone and do something different. Mm. You know, John Lennon, I remember when he was, do you guys know the song "How Do You Sleep"?
Yeah,
one that came out. So I remember him being interviewed on that one, and you got to understand, I heard this when I was 17, something like that. And he said, you know, you can start writing the song and singing the song to someone else. And it wasn't until years later that I realized I was singing it to myself as well. And, you know, as a 17-year-old, I was hearing that, like, but how could you be confused as to who you were singing to? And then you hit a point and you realize, no, it's true. And so, you know, Take Your Time is one that, man, there were a few influences on that one. There were probably about four or five people at different points or overall that I was singing to. But then at the end of the day, I'm singing to myself, really. You can get too worked up. You can force things too hard, you know. Sometimes it feels like the more you want something, the less likely you are to get it. And you just have to kind of, you know, take the foot off the gas pedal and not care quite as much. And so that was kind of, I think, the ultimate tree that grew from the seed, is just this idea that, you know, take your time. And even though the song is urgent in some spots, it is kind of that, you know, hurry up and take your time kind of mentality.
Are you working with, do you start off with the music, like guitar chords, and then you build a melody on top of that? Or do you start with your melody or your lyrics? Or
yeah, I mean, that one in particular, I generally start with music first, is how it comes. And so that one in particular, I think I had the first line and the walk down that came in the chorus. That was the first thing that came. And then it was kind of hitting the chords and hitting the rhythm there to, you know, hit the climb. So it generally is music first, and then I must confess, I usually kind of weasel the words in around where they can fit.
Good. That's what you're supposed to do it.
I think so. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Well, whatever. I mean, the important thing is to recognize what works best for you or works well for you. And like you say, sometimes it flips the other way and whatever. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the important thing too, from a songwriting point of view, is you try one method and you get stuck, then you can flip to the other method and see if you can keep on pushing, right?
Yeah, and Neil, I mean, you said about the Beatles songs, with some of those songs, it's like, well, where am I now? This is the most important part of the song. And I think that's about songwriting too, is you can tell yourself the same story about yourself as a songwriter and kind of sometimes get too wrapped up in that. Maybe Tuesday you're a words first kind of songwriter, and Wednesday you've got a melody. And one thing that I always like to do is check, do they work together? Because sometimes you can do that and just kind of marry them without their permission. But no, if the music is coming, then figure out what you want to say. And often, I will say, one of the things that I do is when you're singing a line, sometimes just the right word pops into your head. Sometimes you sing a line and this is actually true with Take Your Time, I think, is I heard that first line and there was nothing I could sing but Take Your Time. And so from there, you kind of meditate on what can come from that. What could I be singing about if the chorus is Take Your Time? How did I get to this place? This is not my beautiful car. And go from there.
Yeah. And that's really where your own voice comes into it. Because if you were to hand that title or that line to
songwriters,
you'd end up with 10 completely different songs.
So that's true. I heard off the top the competition with the chords staying the same. And you could probably do the same thing with a phrase. Or a title, and just say, you know, winter is cold. Write a song called Winter is Cold.
That'll be the next challenge. But, you know, I think we should hear the song.
Let's take a listen to the whole thing. Is there anything in particular in this song that you want us to listen for?
The C sharps. Take note of how many C sharps there are. No, I mean,
there'll be a quiz.
Count them all.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, here we go. Tuesday in love by Tuesday afternoon.
great.
Very cool. So I have a question. So your pre-chorus, that's an interesting transition because it's not like going to a fourth or a, you know, a fifth. What is the transition between those two? The, you know, the baby, you don't have to hurry, and the take your time.
From the pre-chorus to the chorus, you mean?
Yeah.
Down to the relative minor, I would say. I mean, the pre-chorus, it walks up from the verse, which is a G, to G, A, B flat, B into C. And then the pre-chorus is just C, G, C, G. And then take your time as an E minor. So I guess properly with the vocal line, it would be up a major sixth or down a minor third.
Mm-hmm. Right. Very cool.
It's not a massive modulation or anything like that.
It's
using the same family of chords, just sort of going to a slightly different place.
Yeah, with no C sharps, embarrassingly.
With no C sharps, and really that's kind of the key too, is that when you go into that pre-chorus, it's just you're going to a chord we haven't heard yet in the song.
Yeah,
even though it's in key. I really like the little clever bits, the way the third line of every verse starts with "and I don't know," but then you hold that the same, and then you switch it again, and the transition to the bridge, it really fooled me the first time I heard it, because I thought, okay, here's a repeat of the chorus, because you're repeating the same lyric, "come on and take your time," but then you realize, wait a minute, this is like a different section. What are you talking about?
How did I get here?
This is not my house. And when you're more talking about Paul McCartney and his attention to those transitions, I think, you know, that level of craft is certainly popping out here.
Well, thank you. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah. Really good stuff.
The irony is I just don't know anything. That's shown lyrically. Everything is just, I don't know this. I don't know that. I don't know this. I know nothing. Yeah.
And of course, the central conceit of "come on and take your time." It's like a nice play on words. It's maybe not, I don't know how original that is, but
oh, it's not. I mean,
you know, it's a good little twist.
Thank you. I mean, we used to always joke. I mean, I remember when you're traveling in airports and stuff, "hurry up and wait" just became ubiquitous every single day. You got to get here right now. And then we're going to wait for a few hours, and then something else might happen. That's probably where it came from.
What did you think of the song, Mike?
Well, speaking of, like, I like the "hurry up and wait" and then the "I don't know." Hurry up and then just wait while I figure things out. But what I liked about the song was the song. It just seemed so, it fit together so nicely, and the bridge was such a nice surprise. Like, each turn has that wonderful where it's inevitable but surprising. And, you know, that's really hard to get. And I really liked the journey through the whole song. So rather than a piece of it in this case, I just like the way the whole thing fit together.
Thank you so much.
This song went through many, many revisions, many versions?
No. I mean, really, that's to my detriment sometimes. I'm not big on editing. A thing here or there, I'll pinch it out. But I mean, in terms of getting your true voice out there, for me, it doesn't feel fair to go back and edit, just because of the way the words come up. And that's not to say anyone else is unfair when they edit. And I've certainly caught my share of flack for not editing, because there are other songs that could use it probably. But just for me, you know, you start to, any time, it's all about sacrifices and balance, right? And for me, when I say something like, when I sang that line, there was nothing I could sing but "take your time." That's one example where I just can't touch that with a pole. There's no way I can edit that. Mm-hmm. And some songs, and I've moved away from this. I used to be very guilty of this, but you'd kind of get those couple of pockets where, like, okay, that's right. And then the rest of the song is, I don't know, whatever, I'm filling space and doing that. But some songs are really, they end up being kind of wall to wall. What's right here. And I just find I've got to stick with it.
Mm-hmm. And it's true that as you grow as a songwriter, I think you edit less, like your first drafts become better.
Yeah. And it's funny. I mean, you find different songwriters edit for different reasons as well. I love ambiguity and I love dwelling in ambiguity. But a lot of songwriters will tell you that you've got to edit that out. You've got to be very focused about what you're saying. And I've seen a couple of first drafts or revisions that David Bowie made, for example. And he's actually revised in the other direction to take out specificity in favor of ambiguity. And when I saw that, that was an eye-opening moment because it kind of taught me that, yeah, you can kind of do what you want. You can decide whether you want to be, you know, well, I was sitting on the front porch with the love of my life, that kind of songwriter, or like the sky was blue, the field was green, and everything was where I wanted it to be. That doesn't really mean anything, but it kind of does just as effective.
Exactly. That's true.
And speaking of doing what we want, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this episode of Song Talk Radio. Special thanks.
Went too fast.
Gay Gordon Ray, it went too fast. And where can our listeners find more about you? You said you were involved in a fundraising.
I'm actually really excited about this. It's a mammoth undertaking, but I'm still excited. It's so we're looking to raise money for the Ontario Coalition of Rape Crisis Centres, the OCRCC. And it's so we're releasing 7 episodes over 2021. I've got a bit of a green screen studio here and I'm doing the instruments all myself. It's COVID safe. I'm 6 feet away from myself at all times. We're releasing those songs. We'll be talking about an album as well and doing that. But they can find that urastar.ca or just go to my website, jgordonwright.com, and that'll take you there as well.
Perfect. That sounds exciting.
Wonderful.
That sounds wonderful. Of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners, so please send us your comments on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Song Talk Radio, or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And also be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes now that we're all in little virtual boxes. And subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider and sign up for a free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on our resources page on the website. And wherever you are in the world, please join us via Zoom at our next monthly Song Talk meetup. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil.
philemery.ca.
You can follow Mike.
Proudfoot420 on Instagram.
Perfect. And thanks for listening, everybody. Be sure to stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Stay safe, everyone, and keep on writing.
Good night.
Stay safe.